Welcome to the regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature for July 6, 2017. The first order of business tonight is a public hearing. But before that, I wanted to point out that we have emergency exits at the back of the room to my right and at the front of the room to my left. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. If you have electronic devices, cell phones, etc., please silence them so they don't interrupt the meeting. That includes legislators. I'll read the announcement of the public hearing. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. concerning proposed local law number D of 2017, entitled A Local Law Overriding Tax Levy Limit for 2018. Is there anyone here who would like to speak at the public hearing on the tax override local law? Well, don't all jump at once. Well, if we don't have any comment, I'm going to close the public hearing. And we'll open the regular meeting. Would you please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey, Ms. Robertson, and Mr. Sigler have asked to be excused. Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
I'm here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
10 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session at the end of this meeting to discuss a personnel matter with respect to a particular person. We'll proceed to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that the public has to come and speak to us on any topic for up to 3 minutes. If you'd like to speak, we ask that you fill out one of these blue cards at the back of the room. And by doing that, you're agreeing to our rules. Our rules are that you agree to the three-minute time limit that we set for you to speak. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. And with respect to personnel complaints, personnel matters should be directed to the relevant department and or supervisor, or in the case of a department head, to the county administrator, except for the county administrator, county attorney, finance director, and clerk of the legislature, that should be directed to the chair of the legislature. The first card I have tonight is Sue Chafee and then Deborah Dawson. Please step to a microphone. There's a three-minute countdown clock, at the end of which you'll hear an audible ring if you're still speaking. At that point, please conclude.
I don't know. Is this on? Okay. So I'm Sue Chafee. I'm the director of the Immigrant Services Program at Catholic Charities, and I just wanted to give some brief updates. We do receive county funding for the Samaritan Center and also the Immigrant Services Program. I asked the Samaritan Center director, what are we doing with the funds, because we do receive emergency financial assistance through the county. And just off the top of her head, she said we've recently given out 200 bus passes and help 40 people who had shut-up notices get their utilities back in line. So those are two of the highlights there. And then they also have a place to stay, which is transitional housing for women in the community, which is a new initiative. And so far, right now, the house is full. We have 4 people in there. There's been a total of 12 people that have been housed there, and 8 of them have successfully transitioned. So that's been a good success, a successful start for that program. As far as the immigrant services program, we really appreciate the funding that we have. I think everybody knows what a hard time this is to be providing immigrant services and kind of what the new administration has done to stoke up fear. But with funding like that we get from the county, we're able to have the infrastructure and have the staffing in place to provide legal immigration services, which is very important at this point. And then other services that we've been providing, I'm very nervous, I don't know why, but other services we've been providing are job development services for immigrants and refugees who have limited English proficiency. And then we also help people with cultural and language barriers access community resources, which can be very difficult to access. So that's, I think, an invaluable service that we provide. And then as far as something new, we do have the Refugee Resettlement Program. We started these services this past year. We're approved by New York State, or by the Department of State, to be a new site for refugee resettlement services. Thus far, we were approved initially to resettle 51 immigrants or refugees into Tompkins County. The executive order came in. That number got reduced to 31, and then it got reduced again to 26. So we're really in flux, not knowing what's going to happen as this plays out in the courts. But so far, we have brought 10 individuals to Tompkins County, a family of 6 from Afghanistan, a family of 3 came last month from Colombia, and 1 individual from China. We had 16 other people slated that we had accepted to come from Syria, and because of the refugee ban and the kind of the suspension of the refugee admissions program, those cases have been halted right now. But otherwise, the first 10 have gone very successful. We're in the throes right now of resettling these 2 families, or the individual and the family of 3. The family of 6, we have been providing ongoing services, and I think this is going to be a really important program. We're off to a good start with that. So I think we have a lot more to tell, but we'll do that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for that update. Deborah Dawson, then Susan Moulter.
Okay. Move the switch. If the green light comes on, it's on.
Move the switch up. Okay, there we are. So several weeks ago, members of our LGBTQ+ community asked me to assist them in asking this legislature to amend its policy to make it optional to give one's name on these blue cards. They impressed upon me the dilemma of people who risk losing their jobs, their freedom, or even their physical safety if they must give their names on the public record to express a position that may be unpopular with their employers, law enforcement agencies, or members of the public. So I did some legal research. I found at least 1 advisory opinion from our state's Committee on Open Government that concludes that this legislature may not compel a person to give his or her name as a condition precedent to participating in privilege of the floor. And I was really excited about that. So yesterday, I came to the Government Operations Committee meeting armed with my little advisory opinion and accompanied by members of the LGBTQ+ community. They spoke from their experience in their hearts as marginalized residents of our county, and I spoke from what passes as a heart among lawyers. We were soundly rebuffed. A majority of the committee members cared not a whit about what the Committee on Open Government had to say on the subject, nor were they particularly concerned about the legitimate fears of some of our residents. Rather, they stressed how helpful they find it to know that speakers will obey the rules, give their names, say whether they're speaking on their own behalf, and whether or not they live in Tompkins County. Of course, Mike Lane could say, rather than by signing this card, by submitting this card, you agree to apply by the rules. The blue card could ask the questions, do you live or work in Tompkins County? Are you speaking on your own behalf? If not, whom are you representing? But those options were not considered. One committee member opined yesterday that having and expressing an opinion in today's world was an inherently risky proposition. And that may well be true. But all we were asking for was that this legislature make it a little less risky for the people who have the most to lose. In a committee of five Democrats in the most liberal county in New York State, we couldn't rouse three members who were willing to recommend that to the full legislature. So I'm thinking maybe a reminder is in order, and it is this. It's going to take more than that sign to make these legislative chambers a safe zone. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Moulter. Then Amanda.
Susan Moulter, Town of Ithaca. In the spring of 2009, I opened a meeting saying the League of Women Voters of Steuben County does not have a position for or against fracking. But because we have positions on air and water quality, we are showing this film tonight. The next day in Pennsylvania, in a newsletter, the headline was, League of Women Voters of Steuben County opposes fracking. That was a flat-out lie. I mention it now to remind us that many people today who don't like someone else's race or religion or lifestyle resort to such tactics, and worse, to demean that person. Some will yank a scarf off the head of a Muslim woman. Some will follow a gay or lesbian or transgendered person from home to work to slash their car, the tires of their car, or harass them in frightening ways later. Some will use vicious dogs to attack indigenous people defending water in North Dakota. And some will stab and kill Good Samaritan citizens like you and me who come to the aid of women on a train. This is our country today, and we, by our silence, allow these atrocities to continue. So I was very surprised yesterday to watch in the Government Operations Committee four residents raise the question of the issue of putting people at risk of being targeted by requiring them to give their name on this blue piece of paper before speaking. A solution was offered, but no one took it seriously enough to bring to the legislature. The solution is to change the wording on this blue sheet. Let people write their name or a pseudonym or three numbers so the chair has something to use to call on that person and ask questions of the person on whether they live in Tompkins County or work in Tompkins County or receive compensation from any entity that will benefit from their testimony. These questions give you the information you need without putting people at risk. Recently, this body passed a very landmark resolution to protect the safety and well-being of its residents. Changing this blue card would confirm that you mean that. I hope you will discuss this topic in another committee meeting and get it on the legislative agenda soon. When these changes are made, Tompkins County would once again be a leader for other counties to follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. And Charles Geisler.
Good evening, and thank you for having this public speaking period portion of your meeting. And I want to tell you that I'm here because there are hundreds of people in this community who can't be here. And I'm here to talk about open government in 3 minutes. 3 minutes. How much can one person possibly say in 3 minutes? And more importantly, how much will you really hear? And how many of you really, really care to listen to somebody that you've never met talking for 3 minutes in a position that's not entirely comfortable because all of you have been elected to be here? The people who live here, my neighbors, my friends, my family, they've elected you. They trust you in this position. And it may not matter to you, but it matters to me that I am the seventh generation of my family to live in Tompkins County. My mother's father was born on the south side. And his mother, my great-grandmother, had the nerve to get the first divorce in Tompkins County. And she divorced her alcoholic, abusive husband and raised not one, but two children as a single working mother in this community on Cayuga Street. And she owned her own home. And that would be near impossible today. Does that matter to any of you? You know, it's not so much about me as it is about us and the transparency in which we all operate. I've been a registered voter since 18, and I'm very proud of the fact my grandfather voted for FDR four times. I've lived in the same home for almost 13 years, and guess what? Politics doesn't come to the door anymore. Casey Stevens isn't on the radio in the morning. My grandfather's not calling in and talking to him about what is happening in this community like he did every day after reading the morning newspaper that was delivered to his door. The Ithaca Journal isn't even published in this county anymore. And we have the nerve to call it the local paper. There's no email listserv, you know, not for the concerned constituents of my district. Tom Reed has had more town halls in my district than my representative on this legislature. There's never been an opportunity for a conversation, just 3 minutes. And if you, as elected representatives, if you choose to hear any of this, you may comment or you may not. And you have no time limit if you choose to comment. You can talk for as long as you want, but I will never have that chance unless you approach me and ask to talk about it. And the thing is, it's not so much about me and you. It's just a minute more, please. It's about the community hearing this conversation. It's important for the people to hear this conversation. But where is the conversation? There are reasons why people aren't here for public comment on the tax levy limit. They don't know about it. They don't understand the issue. And guess what? They're on vacation. You know, the kids are done with school. Summer camp hasn't started yet. And guess what? It's not worth their 3 minutes because their public comments aren't going to change any of your minds. You've already decided. Thank you.
Thank you. Charles Geisler?
Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today and for listening to us. I, too, would like to speak to the matter of the blue card and the privilege of the floor, which indeed is a privilege and a two-way privilege, is it not? When it comes to the privilege of the floor and the card, in my view, the decorum rules are quite reasonable. Thanks so much. Having to provide our name and municipality seems thoroughly innocuous, but in fact it can deter people at risk in particular, from showing up and speaking. For many of us, that's not an issue. But for lots of people, maybe an increasing number of people coming into the county, it actually is an issue. I'm referring to people who are afraid of spiteful employers, abusive spouses, overzealous law enforcement agents, and homophobic bullies. People who might harm my friends and my daughter, who's a lesbian. I favor retaining the decorum rules on the blue card, making names and municipality optional, which is done elsewhere in Tompkins County, for instance, the village of Cayuga Heights. And where you request the information about whether you're representing yourself, if that actually is sort of inadequate to find out. Let's have a box which says, are you representing yourself? And if not, identify who you are representing. So if somebody's a lobbyist for another cause or some other entity, that's on the table. I think the solution then is actually rather straightforward and simple. I like the card. but I think it's problematic in its present form, and I hope you'll review it, as others have said. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Are there any other cards that haven't been handed up that anyone would like to speak? Thank you very much for your comments. Are there any municipal officials here tonight who would like to speak to us? Not seeing any. Let's go to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak tonight? Okay. Dooley.
Yes, I do. Net neutrality is a topic that we occasionally address here. July 12th is going to be an action day in support of net neutrality. I'm assuming I don't have to explain what it is to you, but I will call your attention to the fact that if you have time on July 12th, let your representatives in Washington know how you feel about the importance of net neutrality. It's really nice to be able to get a variety of programs that one actually wants to see and not just what your sole cable company thinks you might want to see. That's all. Thanks.
Anna Kellis.
I just wanted to speak a bit to the comments today, and I think that the fact that people feel comfortable coming and having a discussion about the blue cards with us is telling in and of itself that we can have an exploration as a community. There's an experience that I guess I wanted to share with the public. As some of you know, I came into the legislative position that I have from the nonprofit world, sustainability, and activism. And as an activist, it's very easy to be very pure and in some ways black and white about what your stance is. And there's something very beautiful about that. And that actually was part of what encouraged me to become part of the government, because of my interest to be involved and have a voice on the inside here at the table. And I think that it also was something that was of interest to the people who elected me. I had a very interesting experience, though, from the day before I was sitting at this table to the day after I was sitting at this table. And I've experienced the case where there are assumptions that if you are sitting at this table, you are therefore other, and you are therefore no longer listening. And I would like to say that my door is always open, and my colleagues I have found, even before I stepped into this position, to be open for phone calls and emails, and in fact, that is part of our job as your elected officials. So I would just ask that we all continue to have this dialogue together, and that we discuss it in that way, remembering that we are humans inside the table, around the table, on the table, away from the table, wherever you happen to be sitting in the room, that we are all still humans trying our best. So I just wanted to say that I appreciate everybody coming, and there is a robust discussion occurring, and I appreciate that.
Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Boy, it feels like the world's a mess these days, doesn't it? So it's hard to know where, what issues to focus on. There's so much coming at us. So there were other things I was going to talk about, but I think that I will just limit myself to, I want to thank all of the people who come to us, who came to us yesterday, who came to us tonight, and who come to us on a host of other issues. I think that the only thing, I think government is hard to push. I think that the only thing that is sure not to have an impact on our government is not showing up and not speaking out. That's the only thing guaranteed, where you, the results are guaranteed, I think. Please keep coming, and even when it seems like a shot in the dark.
Carol. Rich John?
Again, thank you to everybody who came in and spoke. And obviously, I was at the meeting yesterday. I was one of the committee members who you were talking about. And I understand what you're saying. And it is trying to strike a balance between being as open as possible and making sure we have a full discussion where we're properly informed of who's before us. And I had mentioned something yesterday. I just wanted to say again that if you are concerned about getting up and talking with us, if you want to write a statement and bring it to a legislator you trust and have them read it, I am sure somebody would do that for you. Thanks.
Anyone else? Jim Dennis, then we'll...
Yeah, thank you, Mike. The comments are about the blue cards are very interesting to me because I had a long conversation with City Clerk Julie Holcomb, and they virtually have the same system we have. But their major difference is they have security guards at the door that everyone has to go through a metal detector because for some of you, someone threw a shoe once at the mayor 8 or 9 years ago. And, you know, I had this conversation with Julie, and her blue cards are there for very legal reasons. When people come and say things, if they say things about employees, which we warn about here, and, you know, they want to have a record in their own minutes. What they do different than us is that if, say, seven people want to come and talk about one issue, the mayor will say to one person, you know, you get 7 minutes or 8 minutes, you talk for all the people rather than have seven people talk for 3 minutes, which ends up as 21 minutes. So they're a bit more flexible with that than we are. But it was very interesting to me that that they, too, have a very similar situation that we have. And, you know, we maybe could make some small changes. And it's always been my impression that if you don't want to say your name, don't say your name. You know, that would be something we could possibly change. But I think we need to know that you're not from Seneca County coming down here talking about it, and we really have no impact on you at that point. So I guess I would suggest to Dan that, you know, maybe it has to go back to the drawing board again and take a look at it. But there are some things that could be done that could make it a little feel, I guess, a little more safe to people.
Will?
So I was also one of the members at the meeting yesterday, and I was the one who opined about the inherent risk of voicing an opinion. That, to me, is demonstrably true in this society. Thank goodness for people who voice opinions and have the courage to stand up. It does take courage, but there can be consequences. And I want to have a safe civic space where people feel free to have divergent viewpoints, where they can sometimes be passionate and differing and opposing, but we can all agree at the end to try to move forward with the knowledge that we are all members of a common community. Jim mentioned the lack of security. I am proud that we do not have that. But I also recognize that that is an inherent risk as well. There is, in this society, a huge potential for people doing violent acts, and that having somebody doing a metal detector would provide, in a very small kind of way, I suppose, added measure. But it changes the feeling of what happens, and I hope we never, ever feel compelled to do that. I want to thank people for the very constructive suggestions in terms of the way the blue cards could, they're actually not cards, they're sheets, but our sign-in forms could be modified. I don't think anybody in the committee is inherently opposed to taking a strong look at that. In fact, our Chairman Klein at the end said, anybody has suggestions, bring them forward at the next meeting. We'll talk about that. One thing that's always bothered me about our cards is the reference to telling people that it's inappropriate in this context to talk about named county employees. There are very strong reasons why we have that in terms of legal protections, but in no way do I want to be conveying the sense that we are disinterested. We are really, really want our... We have a wonderful workforce. They generally do a fantastic job, but if there are problems, we want to know about them and be able to address them. It's just this is not a way that works for that particular... So keep coming, thank you for... Oh, and by the way, we do have unlimited time. I would support limiting that time for legislatures to the same 3 minutes that everybody else gets. That was voted down when it was brought forth earlier in the year, but maybe it'll come back. Thank you.
I brought my wand last time. Less than being clairborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Will. I will not support that 3 minutes for legislators if it comes back again, because I think there are many, many, many issues and that constituents bring our way that we try to address in our privilege of the floor to let them know or to share with their colleagues. I want to read very quickly from someone who could not be at the meeting here tonight. Tompkins County legislators, I'm writing as a longtime advocate for victims of violent crimes. I was for many years a rape crisis volunteer and later a member and president of the board of directors of Ithaca Rape Crisis / Crime Victims and Sexual Assault Services of Tompkins County. I have worked especially closely with many people in the LGBTQ community and with both First Peoples and members of immigrant communities who suffer from PTSD. I am also an engaged citizen who frequently attends town and county legislature sessions. I'm very familiar with the open meetings law. If you care about the safety and well-being of the residents of this county, and I must assume you do, as you are serving them in your capacity on the Tompkins County Legislature, you should immediately stop this practice of requiring people who wish to speak at legislature meetings to reveal their names and where they live. This could put people in harm's way, and I'm sure you do not wish this. She went on to quote from the state governor's, the State of New York's Committee on Open Government, but concluded by saying, I trust you will want to ensure the safety and comfort of all members of the public who want to participate in local government and cease this practice. Cordially, Maura Stevens. Thank you, Maura, for that. I want to chime in just a little bit on this, and I'm glad to sort of hear the sentiment around the table that most of my colleagues are thinking that there's potentially ways that we can change this practice to make it a much more inclusive process. Several of the people who spoke here this evening came to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee and spoke there as well about the very issue. And as a county that prides itself, and as a matter of fact, I'm proud of much of the work that we're miles ahead of many of our colleagues throughout the state in moving towards being a place that is inclusive for everyone. We're not there yet. We're not fully there yet, but we're miles ahead of a lot of folks. And as we continue to evolve and as our nation continues to evolve, we will have to make changes to some of the practices that we've been engaging in over years. I am not, and I'm going to be straight up honest, because that's just me, I will not be in favor of not having time limits for people to address this legislature, because I will not sit here until 2 o'clock in the morning for a meeting that will go on and on. Okay? I have a young family. People have to go to work the next day. So I think that there are some rules that we have to have in place. Is 3 minutes enough for someone to address an issue with us? Probably not. But there are other avenues. People speak, people write. I brought with me a lovely handwritten note I got from one of the residents in my district. Thank you very much, Sarah, talking about the jail expansion. And it was much appreciated because it's not often that people will write you a letter. to talk about these issues. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the conversations that I can have wherever I go. Not all the time in Wegmans, I'm not going to lie. I'm trying to go in there, get my broccoli and leave. But I'm happy to engage in those conversations because people have things to say. And if I don't have the time to do it then, I will make an appointment to meet with someone someplace else for us to have those conversations. So I just want to be clear about where I stand on this. I expect that we will make some changes, that we will move as we think about building this inclusive organization, that we will go to that place. At the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, over the years that we've had that committee, we haven't had many people come to us at public at privilege of the floor or public speak. But each time that people have come to speak before us, we have passed our own sheet. People can choose to sign their names or not. And we've just generally just asked if there's anyone here who would like to address the committee. And I have not put a time limit on folks. I have said to folks in general, we allow between 2 to 3 minutes, and people have been very gracious in self-monitoring. If folks are going on, I will cut them off because we have the business of the committee to go on with. There's no right answer. Some people are going to like it. Some people are not going to like it. But I hope that we will err on the side of building a safer and more inclusive environment for people to participate in government. Thank you.
Anyone else? So Anna wants to have a second chance. Anyone hasn't had a first chance? Go ahead, Anna.
Just two things. One that I forgot to add to this. So I wanted to remind people that Dan did mention, who's the chair of government operations at the end, to please submit any possible additions or alternates to the blue card that you think we'd like, that you would like us to consider. I can say that I have submitted to myself that I would like the Government Operations Committee to consider after speaking with several members of the LGBTQI community. So again, I request that if you have a desire to see that change, that you submit to us an email suggestions, and that is something that we could consider. The other thing is non sequitur to this discussion, and that is about the jail study committee and the jail study that we've been doing. I just want to say very briefly, we in the committee have been very adamant about making it very clear that it is an evaluation of the services that are provided in the community, services that are provided in the jail, the personnel that we have in the jail, and we have fought a fear that we are directly considering a jail expansion. And I thought that we had done that rather successfully because that is technically absolutely not what we are doing at this time. And I've heard people continue to use that language, and I fear that that is an intention to galvanize people with the misinformation to rally the troops. And I would like to encourage people to come to the Jail Study Committee so that they themselves or you all can get a sense of what we actually are doing. The study is coming out in a week. And I would request that if you do hear people saying that there is a study that is determined to expand the jail, that you explain to them that that is profound misinformation at this time. And so I would like to request that we continue to work as a community to make sure that everybody feels engaged and informed properly. So thank you.
Carol, second chance.
Thinking about what Leslin just said, and knowing that, learning now that WDIC has had some discussion about this, I believe you meet before the next GO committee meets, and we often do. You meet during the fourth week of the month, fourth Wednesday. So it might be helpful. We often do have more than one committee consider various issues, and it might be really helpful if you have time on your next agenda. I assume changes to this card could come out, proposals could come out from either committee, but it's been in GO, but maybe give some recommendations as a committee might be really helpful for us to have. Either way, or if GO is tired of dealing with this issue, it's been back and forth a number of times, that would be another way to go, is just let's try a different approach.
Mike, just a quick correction. I was specifically referring to jail bed expansion.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said I just wanted to make a correction, that I was specifically referring to the expansion with respect to adding beds to the jail so that we could add more people. I was referring specifically to that.
Okay. All right, I guess we can move on. We have some of our staff out in the audience from the planning department. Martha Robertson is not here tonight. Julie Kiefer is the vice chair of the Planning Development Environmental Quality Committee. I wonder, Julie, if you would please move Resolution B.
I'd be glad to. I just have to find it.
Page 9.
And Martha is in California. She's really sorry to miss this meeting because this has been her baby. She's been shepherding this through many iterations, and she's sent me a message to read you from her. First, I will move Resolution B, endorsing the Tompkins County Housing Strategy.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna Kellis.
And
discussion.
Go ahead, Julie. I'd like to convey Martha's thoughts. In endorsing the 2017 Housing Strategy, the legislature will be making a very important statement of our values and priorities as a community when it comes to one of the most basic human needs. This strategy charts an ambitious yet pragmatic path forward that balances the roles of the private and public sectors, of the different levels of government, of nonprofits, philanthropists, builders and bankers, neighborhoods and individuals. Many people have contributed to this document, and even more of us working together will be needed to accomplish the many crucial goals that the county legislature will hopefully be adopting. As I've said, many people contributed so much careful thought, creativity, energy, and time on all the steps that went into pulling these data, ideas, and goals together. I would just like to recognize two of them in particular: Megan McDonald of the Planning and Sustainability Department, for her incredible dedication to the issue of housing, her attention to every thread and detail, and for being a pleasure to work with. And Ed Marks, the chairman of the Planning and Sustainability Department, for building on our previous housing strategy to inform the questions and challenges we face today, for his leadership in shaping our process and the product, and for his vision of a sustainable, just, and vibrant Tompkins County. I'm sure Martha's voice is in your head, too, as I was reading those words. I can just hear her saying that.
Other discussion. Anna Kellis.
I just wanted to read, actually, two lines from this report that I found very powerful, and I wanted to thank the team for writing it. The first is, collaboration will be vital to inclusively build the community capacity and will to support appropriate housing development and rehabilitation, meaning it's going to take the entire community to understand and support that there are people here that need housing, and it's going to take all of us to make sure that that housing gets built so that we all have a chance to live here. The second is, these housing challenges are complex and cannot be effectively addressed by any single action or entity. Therefore, it is critically important to harness the momentum by quickly proceeding to implementation of this strategy upon its adoption, which means that by adopting it tonight, that's just the initial tiny, tiny first step, and the journey begins here. There's an outline, play-by-play, steps, support. There are clear steps specifically for the planning department, and I support it wholeheartedly. I think this is incredible. I have seen some disturbing movements in some communities to specifically block, for example, affordable housing and mixed income housing in ways that made me feel very sad. So I'm hoping that there is a wide range of people listening to this, that we can all look back at ourselves and say, if we all lived together, in mixed income and we didn't segregate, I think that we would be a much more resilient and honorable, honest, and safe and vibrant neighborhood and community. So thank you for your work.
Others want to speak? I would like to add, I'm sorry, Carol, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to give either Megan or Ed an opportunity to come up and, I don't know, give us any last thoughts on this. And also, there were a couple of things we talked about in committee. One had to do with whether we ought to increase the number of units that we were targeting. I'm not sure if I can remember off the top of my head what those numbers were and whether we ended up with those. And if not, why not? And then the places that we talked about helping with affordability as well as climate by building throughout here or a section that I didn't find having to do with energy sources and efficiencies.
Right. So in terms
of Megan McDonald
with the Department of Planning and Sustainability, in terms of the targets where we have the numbers for workforce housing, that's actually based off of modeling and the work of the housing needs assessment. And so a lot of the more specialized units where there's not such data available, that's where some monitoring is needed. So part of it in terms of, I think, what was kind of finally discussed in committee as well as within the department is that we want to have credible, kind of fact-based targets, although there were also public comments about wanting to set higher targets, knowing that if we don't achieve 100% of them, we'd still be filling needs. And so that's part of why those numbers didn't change. In terms of energy sources, I'll say that we did insert, and I would have to look for a minute to find the exact page numbers, mention about renewable energy sources, realizing and recognizing that the energy-efficient construction alone isn't what's needed, but it's both the energy-efficient construction as well as using renewable resources for the energy in new homes and adapting existing homes.
Okay. I appreciate your giving that quick summary, and I also want to add my thanks. This was an incredible amount of work, and this strategy, I hope people read it, because it's one of the most clearly written things we have the pleasure to come into our packets as a report and as a strategy and a path going forward, and I really appreciate your efforts, as did we all, I know.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? I would just... Jim?
Go ahead, Mike.
Jim, go ahead. I just want to add my comments to those that read Martha and the others about the great work that was done here. I want to mention that Katie Borghella from Planning is also here, along with Megan and Ed Marks. Interesting enough, chasing affordable housing has been something that this community has done for as long as I can remember. I've read correspondence from Cornell students going back in the 1950s attending meetings about affordable housing in Ithaca. I don't know whether we'll ever catch up, as long as we have a growing university, and thank goodness we do, that's providing jobs and an opportunity for young people to come here and be educated. It's going to be an important endeavor of this community to see that they're housed and affordably, as well as the people we need to have the jobs that work in our community that help support education and our other industries here. This taking time to sit down and look at and write this strategy and to think about where we are with housing now and how we can possibly move forward, what we think we might need, is important, because it sets, planning department likes to use the word roadmap. I sort of like that one. It sets a roadmap of where we need to go. Well, if we can argue about the number of units, But what it says to us is we need more units in all kinds of things. We need apartments downtown. We need apartments in the villages. We need single-family houses desperately in all price ranges, from two-family houses, two-bedroom houses to large houses in places like Lansing or Dryden or Ulysses. We have to have a market that responds to the demands of the people who are out there. So I applaud the Planning Department for the work that was done here, and we just need to continue. Jim.
Thank you, Mike. Ed and Katie and all the people involved. It's an excellent commentary on the county and what we need to do. The interesting thing to me is I'm living in a place right now in Trumansburg where there's a housing development being proposed, and the issue of NIMBY is always the thing that I've seen around here for many years in hurting development, not only urban development downtown, but housing development in many neighborhoods. And while we have this wonderful strategy, we also have to be able to deal with that issue. And it always pops up. The county was involved in something on our own, which we thought was a wonderful project on county-owned land, and it got beaten down. And we went away from it. The developer went away from it. So until you begin, anybody who does this, developer, legislators, neighbors, you have to beat your way through that, and then things may happen. If you're not willing to do that, then nothing is going to change, or at least it will not change as fast as you think it might. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Anyone else? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That is unanimous, and we thank you.
I hope someone will email Martha right now and tell her.
I was just about to do that.
Pay attention to the meeting. There are no chairs appointments tonight. I don't have any particular report unless anyone has any questions they'd like me to answer. I want to move to reports by the staff, our county administrator. Let's start out, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. A few items. I don't think any of them are brand new, except sales tax extender, which at the last meeting I was expressing a lot of anxiety and frustration at what was happening in Albany with the sales tax, the 1% sales tax extenders being blocked. I'm sure it was because we wrote a bunch of angry letters the next day that the state came to its senses shortly thereafter, and they not only... And this shows the power of a letter. They not only granted the extenders, but they made them 3 years instead of two. So that worked out well for us, and that is now in place. So that's obviously good news and a relief as we get ready to prepare our 2018 budget.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to brief you, as I have, I think, every meeting for the last several months on the shared services panel, because it's starting to come to a close, which means that things will begin to move to the legislature pretty quickly. With respect to a report from the panel, they met for the fourth time last night. This has been a great group of mayors and supervisors. We do have a draft report that was, call it, tentatively approved by the group last night. It'll come back in 2 weeks for final approval. And let me just tell you the elements in short form of what's in the report, none of which are surprises. We talked about and included centralized training under the umbrella of the TCOG Training Academy with training provided centrally by TC3.biz. This will not be an exclusive training. If governments want to do other things, they don't have to go through this. but it might be able to open the door for training to governments that otherwise wouldn't have access to this kind of quality training. So that's number one. Number two, we stole the name from TC3. We called it the Service Modernization Plan. You recall that, what that was at TC3? Mm-hmm. Well, Maureen Reynolds is kind of ahead of that curve, and she's been developing these applications, computer applications, that automate very routine paper-based functions, FOILs, marriage licenses, permits, those kinds of things that take time, and therefore they take money to do. And there are now, through Laserfiche, automated applications that we can make available to all the towns and villages in the city, saving them time, saving everybody money. So that is number two, and Maureen Reynolds is happily getting prepared to do something on that front. The third will be a little trickier. The third is to form a joint purchasing consortium to look at financial software systems. I think I've talked about how many of the municipalities don't seem real happy with their current financial systems. They're older workhorse systems. They do what they need to be. They do what they need to do, but they're not as flexible, user-friendly as some of the more contemporary systems. So the notion is to bring together this demand for new financial systems, see if there's a common platform that might be appealing to many, basically put it out to a bid at a better price, let them buy on that RFP if they choose to. Easier said than done. Rick tells me this is hard stuff to be able to get all the right elements into an RFP, but something that almost all the municipalities said from the first meeting forward they would really like to do. In a similar way, a joint purchasing agreement for the transition of streetlights to LED lights. Here the city has taken a lead. They're in front of this. They're beginning to look at it already to see how it can be done in the city. And I believe that the city is willing to kind of take everybody else under its wing to look at the idea of a common engineering contract, to be able to explore a common installation contract, to lower the cost of installation. And I think everybody knows the economic benefits that result, and I think the environmental benefits as well, could be very significant. There's some caveats in all that in terms of the type of light, and there's some science that needs to be brought into it to make sure it's the right kind of light. But there's an opportunity for savings. Surprisingly large number of streetlights in municipalities within the county. So there are opportunities for savings there. Getting toward the end of our list, I've talked to you about the mass notification system. I've called it the reverse 911, so you're aware of that. The notion is a countywide system that the county pays the cost for. It allows us to very quickly let people know about emergency situations and other more narrow-banded things. And we can open the door for every municipality in the county to have that same kind of access to a system that they can tailor messages to individuals within their communities on a subscription basis and at a much lower cost than if we all did it individually. The last item on the list, and it's really being done at the request of the Health Benefits Consortium and Don Barber, they want us to keep reminding the state how much money is being saved by the consortium. And even though I strongly think that the state will say thanks for reminding us about this, I don't think the state is going to look at this as a candidate for a match in terms of the matching funds, but we will be including in the report the fact that the consortium changes every time there's a new member. There are new operating agreements that have to be put in place, so call it new, and it is saving our taxpayers a little less than $2 million every year. So we'll put that in the report kind of as a reminder to the state about the importance of that. The last part of the report is things that this panel of mayors and supervisors have agreed to stick together to keep looking at. The central business office concept, the back office services, they want to keep looking. And it may not be everything that's in the mix, but it may be some things that can be done in common through a central back office operation similar to what BOCES does for the schools. They've agreed to stick together to keep looking at the idea of a centralized code enforcement, similar to what we do with assessment. Maybe there are benefits of a central code enforcement. There are some wastewater treatment and stormwater management things that we want to stay together and look to see if there are savings opportunities there by looking at it in common. And the last one is kind of a new one, the idea of a common fleet maintenance operation. Several municipalities wanted to look at that. Jeff Smith says it might be worth taking a look at. So they want to keep talking about those things after the state's deadlines have come and gone. So the group will stay together for that. It's coming to the finish line of the panel. There'll be a meeting on the 19th, and there'll be a public hearing. The second of three required public hearings will happen on the 19th to get public comment about this plan. And then it will come to you. Once it's formalized, it'll come to you. You'll look at it. You'll change it if you need to change it. You will critique it if you want to critique it. But it has to come back to the panel in enough time for it to approve this by September 15th and send back to the state. The last thing I'll say on this one is there's a missing link still here. We need to figure out how to quantify the savings of at least some of these things. So that's going to take a little brain work to figure out how to put a pencil to it and present numbers that pass the straight face test to the state, because the small reward that goes along with this is the state has said we'll match on a one-time basis the one-year savings that you expect to achieve through these improvements. So that's where that is, and I'm sorry it took so long to get there, but it is at an important point in the process right now. The other two items on my list.
Sure. Let's see if you take any questions on that first, Anna.
Just one thing about the lights. I'm really glad they're doing that, and I have been putting a bug in the ear of several common council members and the mayor of the city about this, but I just wanted to let you know as well. There was an amazing presentation in EMC, Environmental Management Council, last year, specifically on the type of lights at night, and if it is in the frequency range that includes the green and blue, the lower ends of the frequency, it attracts every single moth, bug, night, everything, and kills millions and millions and millions every single night, versus the red and orange, which don't, which they're completely not attracted to. And people just sort of, you know, poo-poo the whatever. They're like small and nothing in our community, in our ecosystem, but they pretty much are the most fundamental food source for most animals. So I love that you're looking at that, and I would talk to Brian Eden and get that information, because it was pretty stellar from a Cornell faculty. Just wanted to add that. And thank you so much for including the code enforcement. I know we spoke about that. But that is so important, because it's complaint-based now, and so many people in low-income communities and buildings don't feel necessarily safe to make complaints. So having that be a collective countywide would be amazing.
I wanted to mention on that same point that although maybe the city's taking the lead, I think if Glenn Morey were here, he would tell you that Groton has already gotten there. They've changed all their lights in the village to LED lights, and apparently are very happy with them and the savings they're getting from them. So if you want to go see some, go over there after dark and take a look at the street lights.
Hopefully all in the red range.
Village of Groton. I hope they're not orange like sodium vapor lights. I don't know. I haven't been over to see them. Dooley.
Joe, I think you said the next meeting is July 19th. And I think that was the date when there was going to be some meeting about the Biggs property, but I don't know if it's at the same time. And I wondered if Commissioner Marks.
20th. Right. It's the same day. The public hearing on the plan will be at 5:30. The neighborhood discussion on Biggs is at 7:30, same night.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
And Joe, maybe you said this. I didn't catch it, but does this group know that this is going to be coming back to the legislature for our comment?
It will. As soon as they're done on the 19th, we'll pretty it up. We'll bring it over, and then call it the month of August. You'll have to be able to take a look at it. My thinking was to bring it to GEO and let that be the kind of the host committee for this, and then to the full ledge.
Can you announce when it's going to GEO, or just give us an email heads up?
Sure will. And just a couple of items that don't relate to that. We are continuing with the search process for two of our commissioners, DSS and planning. The posting period for the DSS commissioner ends the middle part of this month. We're hoping to begin interviews sometime in early August for that. Planning, the posting period lasts a little longer. It continues through, I think it's August 4th, and we'll begin to look for interviews shortly thereafter. It's pretty clear that we're not going to have a successor in place before either of these commissioners leave. So it's my expectation and intention to bring up both of the deputies, Kit Kephart at DSS and Kitty Borgel at Planning, to serve in an interim capacity while there's the vacancy. So that's the plan, and it follows the succession list within each of those offices. I'm hopeful that that's not going to be a prolonged period of time. We're really trying to move the searches along. And the only other thing I was going to say is the Biggs meeting on the 19th at 7:30. Planning and Marks is going to be having a conversation with neighbors about some options for the Biggs property. Just concepts. One is to put a solar array there. One is to look at it as a potential site for structures that look a lot like the Common House at Eco Village. Three or four of them, relatively small multifamilies. The third concept is newish, and it's the idea of a land assembly that would include the Biggs property and some surrounding land that might lend themselves to some kind of a senior living option, maybe patio home type things. This is an idea that's been floated by a neighboring owner. So we'll be talking to neighbors about those things, I think in a manner very much in keeping with what was recommended at the housing summit, to kind of pre-test some things with neighbors before any kind of development plan goes forward.
Where?
Where's the meeting? At PRI.
And that's my report.
Any other questions? Rich?
Just from a timing standpoint, that would be the first. I'm going backwards to the shared services.
Yep.
That would be the first meeting in August of GO for you to stay on track. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And Dan, what's the date of that meeting? August 2nd.
That's perfect.
Thank you. Let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Sure. Just one thing I wanted to update on the airport solar project, speaking of things which take a long time. But we do have our first conference this coming week with a new development team from Tesla. So it seems to be moving forward, and so at this point things look good and we're actually moving. So.
Questions?
That's it.
Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you,
Riches,
Mike.
Riches and Ricks and Richards, and we have to get them all here.
Okay, if you look at page 4 and 5 in your agenda, I'd like to present our sales tax report. And then I have one other item afterwards. You have 2 months to look at tonight, the months of April and May. These are the last 2 months that we've received the full distributions. And if you look at the April under the county section on that page, you can see that the sales tax distributions for April was down 4.22% compared to the previous year. But if you move over to the right-hand column, you can see that there was an increase in the year-over-year amount of 6.47%. So that shows that we're above where we were at last year as of the end of April. Then turn right away to the very next month in May, and the county's portion of sales tax distributions for May was up 4.33%. So we were down 1 month and up the next. And at the end of May, moving over to the right-hand column, the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $13,129,268 compared to $12,379,642 in 2016. This represents an increase of $749,626 year over year, or up by 6.06%. So as of the end of May, we're 6% above where we were last year at that time.
Thank you. Anna?
I've asked this before, but I just wanted to get a summary because I thought I understood it. Maybe I don't. Maybe I do. I'm going to find out. But it says budget estimate halfway through the page, $33,432,162, and it says it both months. I thought that that number was where we stood with respect to the estimated budget for the year, so I would have expected it to change from month to month because we're getting better or we're getting worse.
No, what that number represents, the budget estimate, is the total annual budget. That shows what Joe budgeted for the total sales tax receipts for the entire year. And it's only there just to get an eyeball as to where we are at by right. comparing our year-to-date to that number.
So we are $33 million short of what the estimated sales tax was so far for this year.
No, that's the total.
I was going to say.
No, that's the total budget for the year. If you add up all the sales tax line items in the budget, because it is budgeted in a number of different units, but if you add up the total sales tax receipts, which we budgeted, or the annual budgeted sales tax figure, it's at $33,432,162.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just there kind of a placeholder so you can see what our year-to-date figure is, the $13,129,268, how that compares to the annual
budget. The estimated.
Budget,
the so estimate. We're working our way up towards so that 33.
Right.
Okay, got it. Thank you. I thought it was last year's. It's okay.
Any other questions or comments for Rick? Was that your complete report?
And one more thing, unless it's pulled from the consent agenda, I did have one change to resolution A, which is coming up as part of your consent agenda. This is simply the execution of quick claim deeds for the auction property. We made one change yesterday in the GL committee. On line 4, the word through was properly spelled out, and so that has been already fixed in the county, in the legislative clerk's rendition. There was also not part of that resolution, but as an addendum to it, I had supplied a memo which needed to be corrected from yesterday's meeting. If you look in your red folder, there is a memorandum for me dated today, and I changed two things, really. I changed a couple of references where it said 2016 auction report to 2017. That was a cut-and-paste error. But the one thing that Carol had brought up at yesterday's GO meeting was in the previous memo we had subtracted the amount of money that the properties that were pulled from auction had paid for the auctioneer expense from our gross proceeds. And that was in the fourth paragraph where it starts, total receipts were $148,050. That's still true. After subtracting expenses, the county's gain for the sale of 8 properties, and that's all we had at the auction after all the redemptions was just 8 properties, was $88,048. That's still true. But that third sentence has been taken out completely because I had made reference to the fact that there was another $10,500 that was paid to the auctioneer, which reduced our gross proceeds, and that was not correct because the property owners pay that. The property owners who had their properties redeemed prior to the auction pay that amount. So that last sentence has been struck from the record, and I just wanted to confirm what Carol had brought to my attention yesterday, the improper statement that we had erroneously showed a smaller profit or gain from the auction. That true gain from the auction is still correctly stated at $88,048. So I just wanted to support that with a corrected memo. And if you still want to pull it from the consent agenda, of course that's your prerogative, but I wanted to make those comments for the record should you just want to leave it on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Rick. I believe that changing the spelling of through is going to be a manifest change, but if someone wants to pull it, they can. Any other questions or comments for Rick?
Just
Carol.
Thank you. There were no mea culpas required. It was just a minor correction. But thank you.
Rich.
Looking at the trend, if we're at $13,129,268 after 5 months, extrapolating out, are we going to make our budget estimate?
That's more of a joke question because we have an unequal track
okay.
throughout.
Okay, we're anticipating end-of-year bump.
It doesn't come in at the same pace all throughout the year.
Okay.
And I think I've said this many times before. I don't trust these numbers until the quarter ends and the state reconciles. So in a few days, we'll have the second quarter reconciled, and we'll look at the first half of the year. I think it's going to be really hard to project because we had a killer first quarter. We were up by 10%. So far, this one is flat. Yeah. So we'll see what the next check is in the quarter. Rich, I think it's safe to say we should hit our budget target this year. My hope is we're going to exceed that target.
Thank you. Any last question? Rick, go.
I just want to announce, this is not part of my report, but for a future meeting that's coming up, Jim was so good to host our special audit committee meeting for next Monday at 3 o'clock p.m. What do we do at this once-a-year special audit committee? We review the finished financial statements, which are now completed, and I've sent them out to the audit committee and to everyone on the budget committee, because the budget committee on Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock will be getting the same report from our auditors. So once again, if you want to hear the long 45-minute version from the auditors that tells the whole story for the 2016 financial report, those auditors, there's two of them, will be here on Monday in this room at 3 o'clock p.m. Right after that, at 4 o'clock p.m., the budget committee will meet and hear the same report, but in a very abbreviated 10 or 12 minute version. But it should be very good. So if anyone wants to hear more about the financial statements as we close 2016, come to either of those meetings this Monday on July the 10th. And we will be bringing a resolution that the budget committee will simply approve. It says that they've accepted the financial report from the auditors. That same resolution will appear before the legislative body, the complete body, on our next meeting on July 18th.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, sometimes we have snacks.
Rick, it's so exciting. I'm so lucky me. I'll be there.
Okay, we are going to temporarily change the order of the agenda. We're going to skip to the consent agenda at this point. So we only have one item on the consent agenda, Resolution A, authorization to execute quitclaim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties. Are you moving the consent agenda?
No.
Okay, Carol's moving it. Leslin's seconding it. Ready to vote? All in favor? Opposed? Great. That passes unanimously. Thank you. We're going to move to committee reports, and we're also going to change the order slightly here. Rich, so I hope you're actually ready to jump in with the jail study committee.
The jail study is scheduled to meet July 20th. We anticipate having the CGR consultants report at that meeting, and it should be becoming public roughly a week ahead of time. I know they are working hard to get it into final form. Joe, if you had anything to add, but it should be a enlightening meeting. I guess we'll see what they say. And that will pretty much be the agenda of the July 20th meeting.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Rich? Okay. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslin McBean Claiborne.
Thank you. Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee did meet last week, I believe. And just for one slight correction, Carol, when you were talking about the privilege of the floor for the public issue and the blue cards, it was not an agenda item for us, but members of the public did come and spoke to address us on that issue. But it wasn't on our agenda, so we were thankful that they were there. We, however, did have some conversation around the living wage and as a minimum wage here in Tompkins County. We're going to have an opportunity to sit with the county administrator and talk about it some more to see where we might be as a county. We spent some time on the issue of exit interviews. When we look at our numbers of employees who are coming and going, particularly those who are going, and trying to figure out, is there a way that we should be capturing any information that we can capture about why employees are leaving or employ here in Tompkins County, that would help us do our jobs better, make this environment, this work environment, even more enticing that people want to stay forever and ever. Most people stay. Let me just be clear on that. We don't have a very high turnover, but, So we don't necessarily focus there. We are focusing on when people leave. Why is that? And so our HR department brought a sort of a template to look at as we move forward in discussing this issue and perhaps coming up with some policy around doing exit interviews. Those were the two big things that we had on our agenda that we talked about this time around. We did make mention of the Columbus Day / Indigenous Peoples Day holiday coming up, and that name, or asking the county again to consider naming the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. I have to think for a minute what month it was. Indigenous Peoples Day is one of the conversations we are continuing to have as part of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And we're also coming up on time for the Workplace Climate Survey. Next year will be 3 years, and as part of our policy, we said that every 3 years we will revisit the climate, the workplace climate, and see what kind of progress we've made in terms of building the inclusive work environment we want to build. And so we're beginning to put teams together, marketing teams, teams to sort of review the document. We've already reached out to the vendor who worked with us the last time, since they have historical knowledge of this county, and have customized something just for us. So there's more information to come on that. That's the gist of our meeting.
Thank you, Leslin. Questions? Jim Dennis.
I have one. Leslin, right at the beginning of your report of the committee, did you have a number of turnover on an annualized basis, a percentage number?
I don't have a number in my head, but Joe has been very gracious in doing our diversity metrics report for us. And so every 2 months we will get from Joe what the employment, schedule looks like, who's come, who's gone. What are we looking like in terms of our numbers of particularly people of color within the organization, people who are from the underrepresented groups, people who are in the protected classes, but I don't have that number off the top of my head, but we do get those metrics, and they can be available.
The reason I bring that up is that, it's always stuck in my head that we, on an annualized basis, we have right around 7%. Turnover, and I don't know if I'm correct in that, but and there was a time when the personnel department put out a sheet every month talking about exactly the things you were talking about, and that might be something we want to do again.
Anyone else?
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I'd only offer that we had an unusual year last year. Our turnover was significant last year, I think largely because we are aging out as an organization. If the numbers that I look at are correct, we turned over about 100 of our 700 positions last year. Now, some of it is the rapid turnstile. There are some jobs. We've talked about correction officers. So there was some rapid turnstile activity there, which affects the 100. But we did have an unusually large number of employees leave last year.
Sounds like more than 7%, but thank you.
That's the normal. So the normal is about 7.
Anything else? Okay, I guess we need to go back to...
Oh.
Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Dan Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to add resolution naming of Tompkins Trust Building as the Tompkins Center for History and Culture.
Seconded by Anna. Dooley.
I was seconding it.
Oh, also. Okay. Well, you were behind Anna, so. Carol.
So this came out of government operations yesterday, and it felt very rushed, and I left and felt like we didn't have much time for it. Something as important and as long-lasting as the naming of a building, we didn't have much time to think about it, and it seemed like the appeal was to so that there could be something to refer to in the documents of the groups that are going to occupy the building. I left feeling like we really rushed it too much, and got home and mentioned to my husband, you know, we had talked about it, GO, and and he said, boy, if you're going to name the history, this history and culture building, what better opportunity to recognize the person who ensured ongoing funding for history and cultural activities in the county, who's no longer alive, so it's not a living person issue, but Stu Stein, who made sure there was money in perpetuity in the budget, basically, to do this. So whether we were going to do that or not, I just feel like we ought to have time to consider options. I know you, Dan, I called you and you mentioned that there was a policy on naming, but I have tried since then to find it. I've searched for naming.
Sent it to you last night.
Building
you didn't,
naming.
I emailed it to you last night.
I did not see
did
it,
anybody
so
else
I
get
will
that?
Look. So I'm just not sure we should be taking this up now, especially since we have, what, how many of us here? 9?
Okay. Will?
Well, I hope we do take it up at least to consider. We may decide that it bears more consideration, but I see Rod Howe has been sitting in the back patiently waiting for it, and I hope we could at least speak a little bit to some of what he said in the committee as to kind of why they felt some imperative. So because we are so short, am I right, Mike, it's going to take 10 votes to add to the agenda? Is that correct?
Or, that's correct.
Okay, so it would essentially have take everybody. I would ask if we just add it, and you can still vote against it if you feel it's inappropriate, or refer it back to committee.
Anna?
I did read the policy that was sent about this specifically, Carol, and it says that, I can just summarize for you, unless it's an extenuating circumstance, that we avoid using specific people's names in the titling of buildings. I feel like the community, I would like to see the community in support of this moving forward. What I have a hard time with is any kind of development and work being delayed at all, and to delay it for a name that the people who've been working so hard on this are in support of. And I think it's a beautiful name in and of itself. It says something that we all stand for. I would love to see it passed tonight, and at least for all of us unanimously to put it on the table for that discussion.
And let's remember, that's what we're discussing, whether to add it or not. Rich?
Yeah, I would second those comments, that I'd very much like us to be able to have the discussion and have Rod Howe come forward to talk with us about why there's some urgency to address this sooner rather than later. So I hope we can vote to put it on the floor for the purposes of the debate. Thank you.
Dooley?
Well, not to give away anything that Rod Howe may tell us, but it was my understanding that it's going to be important to get fundraising underway to make this actually happen. And to get fundraising underway, you have to be able to refer to what it is that's being raised money for. So having a name, and we did talk about a lot of possibilities, and the marketing firm had been hired to suggest others. Having a name in place makes sense to me. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be changed later if it had to be. My 2 cents.
Okay, we're ready to vote on whether to add it to the agenda.
You're down one member.
Oh, well, let's continue talking until we get the full complement of people to be able to vote. And I'll say something. I do think we should add it to the agenda to discuss it. I do think it's come on rather quickly. I agree with Carol. I don't know if I agree with her suggestion of a name, but I think we ought to consider it. I also wonder if we should have a name for the program use of the building as opposed to the building itself. I can see where both could operate hand in hand over there, but I look forward to hearing Rod speak about it. Certainly no one's worked any harder on this than Rod Howe from the History Center. Anyone else want to speak? Dan?
So assuming it passes, I'm also going to request that it gets moved up in the agenda so that we can let Rod go home. And just out of curiosity, did people get the policy I sent last night?
Yes.
No. Okay.
Did somebody who has their email with them forward it to me? Because I'm not finding it. Okay. Thank
did
you.
Did you get any email from me last night?
Voting on whether to add this resolution to the agenda or not. All those in favor of having it added to the agenda, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's do that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
10.
Who'd I miss?
Yourself. There's all of us. Yourself?
One. No, I just got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think I missed less one. All right. There are 10. Those opposed? Was there something?
Well, I had objected, but I saw that people wanted to talk about it, so we'll talk about it.
It's been added to the agenda. We'll take it up. Dan, you've asked to move it up, so why don't you go ahead with it?
Okay, so I would like to move the resolution naming of Tompkins County Trust Building as the Tompkins Center for History and Culture.
I would second.
Seconded by Rich. Discussion, Dan?
I'd like to call up Rod to start talking about it.
Rod Howe, Director of the History Center.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I think I was just here. So do you want me to, Dan, just say some of what I said yesterday? Would that be helpful? Okay. So we have been working with Iron Design Consulting Firm to come up with a name. They've been working with the Project Advisory Committee, which basically is three-fourths of the members, the partner members, who intend on moving into the Heritage Education Center. The urgency is not only the capital campaign that we really are basically starting now. It's always helpful to have a name. But once you have a name, there's still further work that needs to happen, the tagline, the monogram, branding. So the name allows us to, the logo, to start developing that other material. The, you know, we did have several names that were looked at. We decided to be, some were pretty innovative, but we felt that they didn't say what the building is really all about. So we went with a name that we thought really conveyed what's happening in the building. We debated for a while whether county needed to be in the title. I think overall there was a feeling that a simpler name is better. So Tompkins Center for History and Culture starts to be a shorter name. We actually met this morning, the Project Advisory Committee, and we know that there's ways through search engine optimization to make sure people find that it's Tompkins County, so there's other ways to address that if county doesn't end up in the name. We are proposing two plaques that would be in the foyer of the building, one that would recognize that you voted to make this happen during the county's bicentennial year, so to call attention to the county's bicentennial year. The other plaque would call attention to the Tompkins Trust Company and their role in making this happen. So we realize there's a lot that needs to happen, but some of it can happen in plaques. There was some discussion about can the building have a separate name from the programs. Our idea is it's simpler to come up with a name for the building that also conveys the programs, because you're going to have eight different entities, or perhaps even more, in the building, and they each have to figure out how they're doing their own branding. So it's the visitor center in, do you call it the name of the building or the name of the program initiative? So there seemed to be some, for just keeping it simple, to have a name of the building that also conveys what's happening in the building. So I think that I covered most of what but I'm open for questions.
Jim?
Serious question. You go out with this name, you're fundraising with it. Somebody comes forward and says, you know, I got a big bag full of cash, and I want my name on the building. Can we do that?
I think there's other ways to give people recognition. Certainly we're anticipating naming opportunities for components, like the exhibit space could have a name, or the research library could have a name, or the visitor center could have a name. So there will be some naming opportunities for major donors in that capacity.
Because I recall a story at Cornell within the last 10, 12 years that a family put down a serious dollar amount for a building, and the person died. Cornell didn't send a representative. The money went away, and it got named something else. So, you know, I think we have to be careful about how we do those kinds of things. So, thank you.
Leslie.
So I have to say that I'm pretty torn on this one. I really would have liked for our community to be more involved in this process. And so I'm not sure that I will support this. I want to be straight up about it. I understand everything you're saying, Rod. I'm having a difficulty. And so my next question would have been, I don't even know who Ironworks is. I don't even know who that is. I don't know anything about them. I would look them up. And so I was going to ask if 2 weeks from now when the legislature meets again, if that is too late for something like this to happen. Is it really going to delay the process that much? If we give the community 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks, whatever it may be, to at least have some involvement. So I can't bring myself to support it like that because it does feel a little rushed to me. And, I'm not even sure if I like the name. I'm just being honest.
Rich?
Let's see. Leslie and I respect your position. And I'd like to make a couple comments, and then, Rod, maybe you could just talk to the amount of time and effort put in by the not-for-profits that are involved in thinking about a name and just a rough estimate of the number of names that were considered. Because I know this has been heavily discussed. In fact, I was at the meeting this morning where it was reviewed, the amount of work that went into it. And in terms of our timetable, we're looking at taking possession of the building in early 2018, probably March, about then. And my concern is that this is late, that we have the not-for-profit partners in this endeavor have a very serious capital campaign to undertake, and they need every day that they can get. It may seem like it's summer, and that's a long way away, but the fall is really a critical time to run a capital campaign. And I talked to Jerry Dietz, who's one of the volunteer chairs of this capital campaign, and he was anxious that they get moving, that they need to have an identity in order to move forward. And I am afraid that we can talk about a name as long as the not-for-profits have talked about the name. So I echo what Dooley mentioned, is that if later on we decide we need a different name, we can change it. But what we can do in the meantime, and I know it would be hard to change in the future, but we could set them on their course, that they can start, and they need to start. So that's unfortunately why this matter came to the GO committee in a bit of a rush. I hope that enough legislators can see their way clear to authorize this name, and we can let them go. Thanks.
Okay, anybody else want first chance? I've got three that want a second chance.
I haven't spoken.
Carol hasn't spoken.
I don't think any of us have spoken.
No,
I haven't either.
I had Will and Anna. No?
I haven't spoken.
Must be left over from the last talk.
They had their hands.
Okay.
Well, discussion about whether
to... Let's go with Anna, then Will.
I guess...
Then Carol.
I'm feeling a bit like I don't want to let the enemy of the perfect be the something of the good. Enemy of the good be the something of the perfect. Whatever that saying is, I feel like...
two things. One is I'd rather have it built than to not have it built but have a really good name. And I guess that's what it comes down to for me. Having worked in the nonprofit world for years, the one thing that I experienced in the nonprofit world is that most of the people who work in that arena are working for nothing because they are treating the living below the poverty line as the directors of foundations, as I was, for years, because they believe in the mission and they are amazing members of the community because of their dedication and commitment from what I've seen and having worked with them and for them for many years. So I'd just like to say that I think that we have had input from a very important sector of the community, and we may not get buy-in all the time in everything, and the question is whether or not we've honored the group that is working really hard for this. Namely the nonprofit community that provides tremendous services for the community. So I respect what Rich is saying. Having personally experienced that, I'm honored that they have given as much time as they have as community members to this entire process. And I hope it gets built, so I hope people think about that. I think that the name is good enough. It's fine for me. It's might not be perfect for everybody, but you'll have 14 different opinions with 14 different legislators. So hopefully we can push it forward.
And I think we're going to have all 14 speak.
Twice. Where's your wand?
Will?
So this is kind of a hybrid project. We are buying the building, but we are creating essentially a new organization of partners to run it, and that's what the latter is what the name is reflecting. And that's not going to be our project. That's this not group of nonprofits. Carol at our committee meeting suggested, well, why not name the buildings one thing and have the group another? And I know you mentioned that, Rob. Maybe you can say a little more why you think that's not a wise idea.
Well, you know, it's also true that people are going to call this whatever they're going to call it. So they're probably, duly close your ears, they're probably still called the Heritage Education Center because that name's been around. I'm sorry. I could be wrong. I just think it will be confusing to folks if there's a name for the building and the name for what's happening in the building and then these different entities who have their own names in the building. So I think there's just a general, it's a simplicity argument, okay. I guess.
And I like simplicity. I don't think that we as a body really should be the prime movers in choosing that name. I think that the groups that are ultimately going to make this work, we should trust their judgment. So that would be my position.
Carol.
So, just an aside first, I spent a long time last night and today trying to search for the county naming of building policy after Dan mentioned it, and I could not find it with any search terms on the county website, but Google, when I put it in Tompkins County building naming policy, found it right away. So, I don't know what that says about our search. And we do seem to have a policy that seems to have a preference for thinking carefully and naming it by more by use rather than after people. But we've obviously not followed that policy in a lot of instances. For example, we're sitting in the Daniel D.H., whatever it's, Tompkins building. We're sitting in the Tompkins
Daniel
building.
Tompkins.
Daniel D. Tompkins building. And people do refer to coming to, you know, the Tompkins County Legislature and don't usually refer to coming to the Tompkins building. But it is there, and we recognize a person. And I do agree that people will end up with some shortened name for this building, I do believe that people will be much more likely to use a shortened name for the building that you and we like if we come up with something that makes that easy. And I'm not sure that... you know, is it? So I don't think we're quite there yet, which is why I wasn't quite ready to put this on the agenda. I do think that buildings are around for a very long time, and that it's worth thinking carefully about. And I really very strongly disagree with the notion that you can't wage a fundraising campaign without a name first. As a matter of fact, I think it's advisable not to. And I'm speaking as somebody who spent 23 years and raised hundreds of millions of dollars for buildings at Cornell University, including Gates Hall. You know, but most of those buildings that didn't already have names, you know, didn't have names till very far into the fundraising. When you're going out to do the very final work, you want to have something to refer to it by. But when you're starting to your campaign, and in some ways it's even a plus, because whether we ultimately agree to a name or not, somebody might have it in their mind to that, you know, to come and negotiate about somebody and or some reason that they want to put a particular name, whether it's a person or not. So I would actually advocate that we wait, and that we do separate out the notion, or that we either wait or separate out the notion of naming the program. In which case, if that's not really ours to do, it would be up to the organizations, you know, that going in there, you know, and give ourselves some time. But in any case, I would like us to at least be at the stage where we have that following moniker or some acronym or way that we are proposing to have the shortened name to be, rather than TCHC, you know, I mean, it could be Tompkins Building. Might be what it becomes, but we already have a Tompkins Building. So my point is just that I'm just not ready to do this. And I'm not sure, do we have the votes? So bless, maybe we should be tabling it for a couple of weeks.
Leslie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's interesting that you say it's not our jobs, but it's before us for a vote. So I'm not sure which one it is. At any rate, my question when I raised my hand was to ask Joe or Rod, someone, to just remind me, if you would please, who are the auto partners or nonprofits who are at the table?
Sure. I always leave out somebody. So somebody keep me honest here. So it's the Historic Ithaca. It's the History Center in Tompkins County. It's the Downtown Visitor Center. It's the Discovery Trail Executive Director. It's Community Arts Partnership. It is the Sustainability Center. It is the Dorothy Cotton Institute. Who did I leave out?
Wharton. Wharton and the Aviation Group.
Wharton, yeah. Studio, and then the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation.
Thank you. Those are the two I was missing. Thank you very much.
Jim?
Mike, I would like to call the question, please.
Is there a second to call the question? Anna. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I only get 7, so that's not called. We'll continue with discussion. Anyone else want to speak? Jim?
Yes, I do. I don't think any of us want to be a part of this building failing for the lack of a name. I think it's a good name, and we should move ahead with it. The building will go because of the outside money that comes into the project, and you know, we put our part in. We have to let the people do their job that they've said they would do to raise the money. And you have to have a name on a building. And Please don't overthink it. Let the people do what they need to do and call it whatever we're suggesting. It's not going to, you know, it needs a name. Please give it a name.
Other hands? Dooley, then Carol.
At the GO committee, I had not expected us to act so expeditiously. I believe the name that Rod tentatively offered to us was
Center for History and Culture
in Tompkins County, which seemed quite long, and I appreciated the fact that the word Tompkins was in there. I wasn't sure if the name county was necessary, and is there a way to shorten it? And we just talked about it, and it sort of fell into place. So, much to my surprise, the majority of people voted it out and said it has to go to the legislature. It shouldn't be up to us to make this decision, and so here it is tonight. And I'm not sure it would be the end of the world if it waited until the next legislature, when maybe more legislators will be present. But I do take seriously the need to have something for them to get busy on. So I'm fine to vote for it tonight. I'm also okay to let it wait till the next legislature meeting. But beyond that, I don't think it should wait any longer.
Carol, please be short.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to clarify, since a couple people raised the question about what I meant by it wasn't up to us. There are two elements here. There's the building itself, the physical space, and then there is a program, a group of programs, each of which have their own names, that will be leasing space from us. And they together create one program. And so it's my sense was that, you know, that's not necessarily, that might be theirs to name as opposed to us having to have a vote on, although it's nice if we do and if we like their name. But that's a different matter from the physical space. So there are often different names for programs that are in spaces as there are for spaces themselves.
Are we ready to vote? All right, so we're on the resolution to name the proposed building, the building that we propose to purchase, and authorize the purchase of.
So can I move to table for 2 weeks? Move to postpone for 2 weeks?
That's a legitimate motion. Are you moving that?
I am, although I won't be here in 2 weeks.
Is there a second?
I'm moving it.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion on the motion to postpone for 2 weeks. Dan.
I'd like to hear Rod weigh in on this one. Sorry, Rod.
I'm not sure our discussion will be all that different in 2 weeks, but certainly our first house party is on July 23rd. Certainly those house, where we're bringing people together, you can have those discussions without a name and explain. What's really being held up is all the things that follow the name, the monogram, the logo, the tagline, where we, I think, could take time to get additional input.
Thank you.
Other discussion on postponement? Rich?
I urge we go forward this evening if we can find a way to do that.
Ready to vote on the motion to postpone? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That fails. We're back on the main motion. All those in favor of the motion to name the building as described in...
Can I have a roll call, please?
Sir.
It's the Tompkins Center for History and Culture.
The Tompkins Center for History and Culture. So we wouldn't call it the old county clerk's office.
Yeah. We'll make sure that people know that's what it is, though.
Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Pass for now. Can I pass
you
for now?
You can pass. We'll come back to you.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kallas?
Definitely.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
Oh, God. Well, that was a mistake. I'd really like more time, even though I'm not going to be here to talk about it. I think I'd really like people to have more time to think about it.
Well, and I got voted down on the postponement.
So I'm going to say no.
Anyone wish to change his or her vote?
Sorry, Rod.
The clerk will announce the roll. Announce the vote, please.
7 ayes, 3 noes.
Does not carry. Dan.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a quick apology to Carol. I checked my email, and you're correct. I emailed it to everyone except you, but duly you'll find you got it twice, so I'm sorry about that.
I have no doubt that this will come back again.
Yes.
Thank you for your time.
Anna.
I'd like to just ask one final question. I understand having done a lot of marketing and putting a logo and putting all of those materials together is exceptionally time-intensive, so I'm very unhappy on your part. Would even doing this in a week, if we could do a special meeting, if we could call that, would anything be helpful?
Waiting for 2 weeks would be fine.
Okay. Okay.
Will?
I'm just thinking procedurally, in terms of bringing it back, are there any obstacles to just reintroducing exactly the same name?
I think there would be, hopefully, somebody who's not here tonight or someone who voted in the negative would move it for reconsideration.
So in that case, I apologize. I literally didn't think quite quickly. If I could change, would it be possible at this point to change my vote to a negative?
It's late.
It is late. I understand.
Don't change the vote after it's been announced.
No, you are correct. You're absolutely correct. But there's some other way to do it, you think.
But there are people who aren't here tonight.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I can ask of Rod and the rest of the nonprofits involved, or whoever's involved in the naming, if the suggested name, you all have come forward, if you'd be so kind, or if we're allowed to do that, I don't even know, to put it out to the public, just to ask, just to say this is what we're suggesting naming, thoughts, comments, anything. So at least people have had some input on something that belongs to the people.
I'm not sure how we'd go about that, but we can certainly talk about that. I know that we'll get 500 names, lots of variations.
We're not asking for additional names. We're asking what we're considering. Do people have any thoughts, comments, concerns about this name?
We can do that. There's ways we can do that, listservs and whatnot, and through the organization's own networks
like
and whatnot.
Yeah, right.
We can
all those
that.
Nonprofit organizations, I don't know if they reached out to their clientele or to the people who they serve.
Mm-hmm.
So just ask that question. Is this is what we're thinking about? What do y'all think?
Okay,
Rod, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Shane, well, as I said, I'm sure we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right, let's take our 10-minute break, and we'll come back and finish the standing committees. We're back in session at doing committee reports. We're up to the old library committee. I think it's to the point where pretty soon we're going to have some action coming out of that committee, so I'm going to be talking about setting up a meeting. We will probably be discussing the current status. I think it's pretty much through the city process, and there will probably be a resolution offered in committee authorizing the sale of the property to the preferred developers. So, old library committee, stay tuned. Questions? Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
Thank you, Mike. I actually pulled up the draft agenda because we've got a lot of different things going on. We're going to be looking for an appropriation to develop a mass notification system. And Joe, maybe you want to just talk to that for just a moment.
Yeah, that's what we have included in the shared service study. It is an annual fee. It's about $20,000 a year to provide coverage to the entire county and all municipalities within the county.
And we're going to have a consider a local law on the surcharge for cell phones. Right now, if you are on a prepaid plan, you are not contributing to 911. And New York State has changed the law to allow us to charge prepaid phone cards as well as everybody else. So if you're paying, if you have a landline, you pay. If you're on a regular cell phone, you pay. And this will level the playing field, I believe. And that's going to come up at our meeting on the 20th. We also are going to have a report on Stop DWI. And also from our assigned counsel program as part of the review of the different agencies under the responsibility of public safety. So it should be a good meeting on the 20th.
Questions? Thank you, Rich.
So wait,
let's go to Health and Human.
I have a question.
Oh, Carol, I didn't see you. Go ahead.
Can you define a prepaid cards? Can you?
Sure. There's people that have a cell phone plan where they just pay every month, and they don't have a regular plan. If they don't pay, their phone just goes dormant. And so what New York State is now allowing is that when they top off their phone contract by upping it for another month, there will be a charge that helps pay for 911.
As opposed to phones that you buy that only have a certain number of minutes on them and you have to literally buy a whole new card to...
No, those. So
it is those.
Yeah.
The ones that poor people tend to have.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? All right, let's move to Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair.
We have not met since... I will speak into my microphone. We haven't met since our last meeting here in the full legislature, and our next HHS meeting is at 4:30 in the chambers here on July 17th. I just wanted to note, as a continuation of the housing series, the presentations from the different departments, the presentation this month on the 17th will be the Department of Social Services and the services that they offer in relation to housing. And that's it.
Questions? Thank you, Anna. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is chair.
F&I has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will be meeting in these chambers on July 11th at 3 p.m.
Questions? Dave, I stopped over again over the weekend and looked at the progress on the Red Mill Road Bridge. And they had poured concrete for the surface and were spraying it to let it cure. So it's coming right along.
That's good news. We were talking about that when I first started on the legislature 8 years ago.
It's been a long one. Transportation Committee. David McKenna chaired it in my absence, so Dave, feel free to jump in. Mm-hmm. Transportation Committee spent quite a bit of time talking about the taxis and ride-hailing services. Meanwhile, of course, New York State has allowed ride-hailing to start as of, I think, the 26th or 29th of June. So we do have ride-hailing in Tompkins County, which means basically Uber or Lyft. They're the only two that have applied for licenses to the state. I believe, Dave, that the committee heard from Julie Holcomb at the city about how taxi cabs are controlled in the urban area. I believe that there were people who spoke about the need for Uber and Lyft, and there were people who talked against it. So do you want to add some things there?
Well, basically, we heard from two of the cab companies and a couple of hotels, in both colleges, and pretty much everybody except the cabbies were in favor of us going ahead and letting them have their shot. And beyond that, I was hoping that somebody from Uber or Lyft would show up. They did not, and neither did TCAT, which is kind of disappointing because I'm sure they're going to be affected. We also heard from Mike Hall from the airport, and he was in favor of it. The issue is availability of cabs at the times when they're needed and long delays getting them at certain locations. So that's why Uber and Lyft are so popular and why these entities would like them, and that being Cornell, IC, the airport, and the downtown hotels.
I want to just mention something to follow up on that comment, Dave. Under the state legislation, the ride-hailing companies are required to have contracts with the airports in New York State. So our airport has been negotiating with Lyft for a contract, and they have a contract in place in which we get a certain fee per, our airport gets a certain fee per ride. To my knowledge, although we've reached out to Uber, we haven't had contact back as of a couple of, certainly before the 4th. I don't know if anything, Joe, if you heard anything more. So we're not the big enchilada. The big enchiladas are Westchester and Suffolk and places downstate that haven't had it. They've also apparently an agreement now with the ride-hailing services in Westchester County. NYSAC sent us an article about having to do with the fingerprinting of drivers, and they've worked out some kind of a system for voluntary fingerprinting of ride-hailing drivers, and they would be the ones that they would hire for the pool. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but the county down there would have to actually provide for the fingerprinting and the administration of that. They're a bigger county than we are. But that's something that, as the discussion of Transportation Committee continues on this topic next month, maybe we'll want to be taking up. We still have the option to opt out.
One of the things that I asked for, Mike, was down the road at some point to be determined that we have a review of how the services are going, the pluses and the minuses for all the various entities, sum them all up and make a decision whether we should continue or opt out.
Will?
Well, that makes perfect sense that we should review. I would hope at this particular juncture that we would really give this some serious thought in terms of what is the best way to serve the people that are not, you know, that are in our county that depend on a variety of different sources, including our bus system, our wonderful bus system, and the existing cab companies, and the potential for a new form. I have some concerns because, and this became very clear at the meeting, which Dave, thank you for chairing it. I found it very informative, but it became very clear as we heard that the ride-sharing or ride-hailing companies are coming in with a really what seems to me unfair competitive advantage. They cab companies are required to have. Well, cab companies pay for the cost of the cars. They take all the maintenance and everything involved with running the cabs. The cab drivers have criminal background checks. They have to do fingerprinting. They have to have yearly health exams. And there's a sort of a standard of safety sort of built into that whole system. But there's a cost. And the ride-hailing services seem to be exempt from that. So we all got, I think, the Lyft contract, and I saw some reference to what the company is doing, either voluntarily or as a matter of company policy. The ride-hailing service, in theory, is here. It started as of last Friday. But in practice, it's going to take some time for them to recruit drivers, to ramp up. And I think this is a particularly good time to examine, okay, what will be the impact on the local existing businesses that have to live under different rules based on a series of regulations. Could those regulations be changed in any kind of way? Is there any way that we could apply some of the safety issues to these new entities? And the state has not made it very easy, but it might not be impossible. So I would hope that we'll continue to think this. I know it's coming back to transportation next month, and I would encourage us all to give this further thought.
Anna, then Jim.
Thank you, Will, for those comments. I definitely got a similar feeling. I hope that we all are cognizant of the impact on taxi cabs and brainstorm as we move forward. I would like to see discussions happening with the city that I know has more control over the regulation on taxis to ensure that they are able to remain competitive. I know that there's some codes that they have and have them look at those specifically, and I'm pretty sure there's some regulations at the state level, so that might be something that we could bring to NYSAC. And the reason that I say that is because there is some evidence of sort of parasitic experience with Uber coming into communities, undercutting existing taxi companies, and then the community loses those taxi companies and then raising their prices. What we are interested in here, and I am not opposed to having Uber and Lyft here, for sure, because I am a fan of diversity, but I think that it would be a tremendous loss if we get them at the cost of losing another, and then we're not really solving, I think, an issue, which is more and diverse transportation. So I think that there's a couple things that it would be helpful to maybe urge NYSAC to take up. One would be the state modification to the existing law for adding fingerprinting. There's a bunch of states that have already done it. Massachusetts just passed an awesome one. So there's templates that already exist. So it might be something worth us looking at. I can send an email around to everybody, or a CNBC state-by-state report on all the different types of laws that have been put forward that I think was, at least for myself, I found it very helpful. The other thing that I wanted to say was that I wanted to remind everyone and anybody who's listening that Lyft is a company that originated in Ithaca via Cornell. And I personally, and this is just my experience from reading, I'm very concerned at the climate and the character of the company Uber. I'm not a fan of their practices and their policies and their culture. So I hope that if we do bring them in, we certainly can't bring one and not the other, but I would hope we lean towards encouraging people to use Lyft as much as possible.
Jim?
Yes, Mike. It's very interesting to me to have them show up. I said it at the meeting out loud pretty clearly. If I thought for a moment that our taxi cab services were running stellar kinds of operations, I would have been less likely to be so supportive of Uber and Lyft, but I don't think they are, and I think they know they are, and there's been enough complaints about all of it. I think the evidence lacking for Uber and Lyft is they haven't been to a community of 100,000 people, and it will be very interesting to see, you know, if we go through a cycle. I would love to see us go through a cycle of everyone coming to Cornell and IC, everyone leaving Cornell and IC, you know, have a graduation involved there, and then you can actually see what goes on with an operation like that. John Kadar was here from the company, and I don't know his name.
Ithaca Dispatch.
I know he operates very, you know, he has a big impact in Chemung County. He's over there a lot. Much of his trade is Medicaid paid for over there. And he comes back here and has an operation here also. I thought the College Town kid had a good idea. The first thing he thought about doing was throwing up an app for himself. and, you know, trying to deal, deal with the competition the way he sees he can do that. My sense is it will make Ithaca Cav better than they are. And for heaven's sakes, they need some improvement. So, I don't think it's the end of the world that these guys are here, the guys being Lyft and Uber. And I hope that, we're all able to take a look at that 6, 8 months, 10 months from now and figure out what the impact has been. I know it will be big on the airport, and I'm pretty certain that Mike Call thinks the same thing.
Carol?
Yeah, I agree with Jim on a lot of what you just said. I do think we'll have the opportunity. In fact, we've got the opportunity. Should anybody want the experience? I see there are about 5 or 6 cars that have been circulating around just while we're having this discussion and popping in and out on these services, which means that they are getting riders and taking them places, and another car is coming back on. There's a couple of pieces of information that it would be useful to have. I saw a reference just a few days ago, I think it was by John Campbell, who writes for Gannett in Albany, that the governor had announced that he was or had just done something to improve the background checks for ride-sharing drivers, and I don't remember whether it was fingerprinting or something, but it was just in the last few days. So
there was another law tweaking it, which is disqualifying people who are on the active
yes.
Child. What's the name of the list?
Sex offender list.
Even level one, yes. I saw that,
All of them are now.
I saw that, included. Too, but there may be something additional on, I don't know if it's fingerprinting or background checks. And then I'd really like to have more definitive information to understand the arrangement between the drivers and the taxi companies here. Because my experience riding in taxis during the years in which that's what I needed to do, was that people told me, that the drivers told me that they were in their own cars. The cars were in terrible shape. I literally, in my big back brace, rode in one car that didn't have any seat, which was not easy. And they were cars that they said they'd owned, and from as far away as 2 hours away. Had to come here to drive. So I'm not understanding the disconnect between some of the information we've heard that the taxi companies provide cars versus the drivers. Some of them the drivers provide their own cars. So I just would like to have whatever the information is if we're making a decision. But I kind of like Jim's suggestion that we not rush on this one way or the other, because more experience might help us to understand the pros and the cons for here in our size community.
Well,
so that could be true, or we could have negative consequences. And Dooley reminded us the precautionary principle, try to do no harm. And I think this is a perfect juncture where there's a lot of things we simply don't know. I did not know, for example, that there were actually 5 cab companies. Ithaca Dispatch is the big one, the College Town is the second, and there are a couple smaller ones. I've been trying to seek out people who work as cabbies. I talked with one who's worked for over 20 years and feels it's a wonderful profession, and he's earned a decent living, and feels that his very livelihood is being threatened by this new model. And I would encourage us to talk with the cabbies. Talk with the cabbie owners, at least Mr. Kedar and I'm blanking on Paul Krieg, the gentleman that opened Owens College Town. Kriegstein? Thank you. Both are trying to set up apps that are somewhat akin to what are used for the national ride hailing companies, so that you can order a vehicle online, you can see where it is, you can see what the cost is going to be. Both are trying to get that in place. Where they are if I understand them correctly, where they're deterred is the state basically set it up so that only national companies could come in and do what this arrangement where you hire people, or you don't hire people, you contract with people, they use their own cars, they take all the wear and tear. In theory, anybody could do it, but you have to pay an initial fee of $100,000 and a yearly fee of another $60,000. That is nothing for a large national company operating statewide. It is prohibitive for a local firm. So the harm that potentially can be done is that we may lose some viable local businesses, people that have been working for many years. And I have talked with cabbies that take their work very, very seriously and really, really try to serve the community. You know, they will be harmed because they just simply can't compete on that basis. So there are at least a couple people that don't happen to be here that are maybe bringing forth a resolution to give a local law to opt out, at least temporarily. Whether that will happen, I don't know. But I would encourage us all to try to understand the situation.
Julie.
I hope that the Transportation Committee will undertake, sooner rather than later, a look at the experience with these ride-hailing companies in small cities like ours. We were reminded at the last meeting that State College, Pennsylvania, is roughly our size, and they have a track record, and why don't we find out what their experience has been? And I'm sure that there are other smallish communities, 100,000 plus, that have had experience, and we should not sit around wondering. We should find out what their experience has been. So I hope that you can add that to your agenda, Mike.
We'll discuss that, yes. Thank you. All right, can we move on? Thank you. Interesting how much discussion that this Uber and Lyft and ride-hailing services generating in our community. Even as late as yesterday, I got an email from a law student at Cornell chastising us for even discussing not having ride-hailing services in Tompkins County, and he wanted me to know that he would never live in a community that didn't have it. So people have a lot of passion around this issue.
How did he get here?
Let's move on to Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've already heard about some of the more controversial items we discussed at our meeting yesterday. Let me tell you about something, I think, uncontroversial, and that is the intranet. So we heard from Greg Potter, Director of Information Technology Services for the county, about two interesting topics. One was the intranet, which is something I don't know, somehow I just had not tuned into at all. So this is our internal intranet for employees of Tompkins County. It has things on there like forms that employees might use. A lot of the personnel department is there. ITS itself is there because it's focused internally. There's a staff directory and a lot of other stuff. And this is currently available to all employees that are on the county network. On the bottom right of each page, it says intranet, and you click on it. And coming soon, it will be available remotely. So right now, since most of us, or all of us legislators, don't aren't on the county network directly, we can't access it yet. Soon. Greg also gave us an update about LUCA. I've mentioned this here before. I'll just mention again briefly. LUCA stands for the Local Update of Census Addresses Program. And it's a database of all addresses in Tompkins County. It's a preparation for the census in 2020. It's really important on a lot of levels that we get an accurate count of who's here. And this is the preliminary work to have that done. And it also has the added benefit of being good for our emergency response system. That, you know, it's important to our emergency response system that we have an accurate database of addresses. So it serves both purposes. The county in the past, in 2010, provided this service for almost all the other municipalities in Tompkins County at no cost. And the other municipalities were very grateful. And we are going to offer that to them again. We expect they will take us up on it again. And as representatives from different municipalities, this might be a good moment when talking with your town board or village board or city council or whatever to remind them that this is happening. It's happening in the next couple of weeks, that they will be approached and offered this service, that we will take care of their data address database for them if they want. I'll just mention the blue cards thing. It's already been said a few times, but what happened at the meeting yesterday was we spent 20 minutes, and each member of the committee got as much time as they wanted to express their opinion about the blue cards and what should and shouldn't be on them. And then I said, okay, the next step is that we will take it up at the next meeting if something is submitted in writing. That's my request. That's my request for everything, actually. I just think it's better committee function if there's something in writing to react to. So that is my request. If you have suggestions for how you would like to see the blue card altered, then please submit them in writing in a week in advance of the Government Operations Committee meeting so that it can be in the agenda packet so we have time to think about it, and then we'll have time at the committee to talk about it. The next meeting is August 2nd. That's my report.
Questions? Anna?
I just wanted to note that during this meeting earlier, I sent you two.
Yes.
Possible?
Received.
Okay. But I did want to note that I'm happy to review them and edit them before that meeting. I'd probably prefer that. So if you have any comments,
well,
or you want to share it with the committee.
Okay. If you wanted to edit them, you still have a couple of weeks to do it. They looked clear to me. But.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Julie Kiefer is the vice chair.
Well, the Planning Committee had a special meeting just on housing to which you all were invited. And we dealt tonight with the outcome of that special meeting. The Planning Committee usually meets on the first Thursday of every month, so I'm assuming the next meeting will be August 3rd. I have no idea what will be on the agenda.
Questions? Thank you, Dooley.
Sure.
Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is chair.
excuse me. We have a meeting July 10th. Rick told what the schedule was. What time is the audit meeting class?
3:00.
Okay. And the Budget Committee is at 4:00. So we'll all be there for that. Other than that, I have nothing.
Do you have a resolution?
Yeah, but that's a number filed.
Questions? Thank you, Jim. We'll go to individual member filed resolutions. Jim, you have a resolution, Resolution C.
I do. It is an adoption of Local Law Number D of 2017, a local law overriding the tax levy for 2018, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion. Jim?
A couple short comments. This is something we've done every year about this time in preparation for the build-out of the budget that begins in September. If, in fact, we go over the 2.4 levy that we asked the county administrator to build the budget at, that we would be able to do that with this piece of legislation in place. The times we have gone over, it was in place. The times that we did not go over, we then revote the resolution, remove it, and let New York State know that we've done that. And it always made sense, and I think the ledge agreed with it for many years that we do it now, so it does not become a part of the overall budget discussion.
Anything else? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thanks for that.
Minutes of June 20th. Someone want to move them? Anna, seconded by Dan. Ready to vote? All those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Is there any? Remember, we have an executive session, but is there any unfinished business first? All right, I'll take a motion to go into executive session to discuss a personnel matter having to do with a particular person. And we will have the executive session. We will come out of executive session, but we aren't anticipating taking any action. Can I get a motion to go into executive session by Anna, seconded by Carol? All in favor of executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. We'll break for just long enough to get shut down and set up for the executive session. Thank you to all the folks that have helped, Kathy Covert, our clerk, Michelle Potthoff, our deputy clerk, Marcia Lynch, our public information officer, and Mike and Jim up in the control room, Mike, because they do a wonderful job for us.